KBOO has a wish list, and we'd love help getting some of those items donated. Some things on our list include a color printer, digital recorders, a pop-up canopy, dishwashing detergent, brooms and mops, or services like roofing, plumbing, and electrical work. Please contact station co-manager Delphine at del@kboo.org or go to kboo.fm/kboo's wishlist for more information about supporting your favorite community radio station, KBOO Portland.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. I'm Jamie Partridge, your co-host. I'm here with Amanda Hill, who just came in off the freeway. Good evening, Mandy.
Good evening.
And our program tonight is an interview with Portland Tenants United leaders, Sammy Black. Hey, Sammy.
Hey there, Jamie. Hey, Amanda.
And hey. Ethan Harrison.
Hi, goodness. What's a leader now, huh?
Oh, okay. So none of that. We're done with that.
No, I'm kidding.
So this is of the Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. And, of course, when we're talking about tenants, we're talking about our class, folks. The Portland Tenants United fought hard for renter protections at Oregon State Legislative Session this year in Salem for rent control and for an end to no-cause evictions. Despite the exploding housing crisis, you all came away with nothing. So what did you hope to accomplish in Salem? What did you hope, and how did you hope to do it?
Well, so House Bill 2004 started out really strong, ending the preemption against rent control and ending the practice of no-cause eviction. And it was amended in the House to get out to the floor, where it did pass in a slightly weakened form that we could still support. But then went over to the Senate, where it was really butchered. Mm-hmm. And at some point, the organizing committee of Portland Tenants United decided that we could no longer support the bill.
It's interesting how politics happens, right? Where you have a pretty solid bill in the House. I remember hours of testimony, and then it gets over to the Senate and just becomes something kind of alien to its original form. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can kind of see where that comes from, right? There's the Equitable Housing Pact, which is the where all the landlord realtor money was aggregated, Multifamily Northwest front group there, and they spent a lot of money convincing the Democrats to water down and basically destroy this bill.
So can you talk a little bit about the specifics of what happened to the bill?
Well,
yeah, like I said, the bill showed up in the House. I don't know if folks got to tune in to the Senate has a really nice live streaming thing where, I don't live in Salem, I live in Portland, but I get to watch what happens down there in the gilded city, as I imagine it. Tenants got to come down over the course of, goodness, the testimony went into the night. And tell their stories. Landlords were there too to offer their vision of threatening, well, some might not say threatening, but their vision of what this tenant bill would do to them. And then it was kind of off to the races, how these things work. There were the lobbying for votes. There was a lot of work done there. I think this is an interesting maybe point to talk about. This is the first time that Portland Tenants United has engaged heavily in policy work, coming from what I like to think of as the streets. This is kind of our first foray there. So I think it followed the normal channels. And then, when it got into the Senate, that was kind of a tougher nut to crack. Found that votes there were a little more tied to money, a little more tied to not the ideals of, Portland Tenants United, having everyone housed, freeing up municipalities to enact rent control on their own, but rather kind of, who are you scratching my back? That good old boys club of like...
There's a fair amount of landlords in the legislation also,
I'm
correct?
Glad you brought that up. Yeah,
Several of the senators who were never convinced to vote for this bill are also landlords. Mm-hmm. So,
and I hear you guys did a fair amount of direct action towards these folks.
Where did you hear that at?
Maybe I took part. I don't know.
Yeah. So we at one point held a rally out on the street in East Portland, which is the district of Rod Monroe, who is one of the Democrats, who is a big-time landlord.
Senator.
Yes, he's a senator as mm-hmm. well, yeah. And we were outside of his church, and it was a polite rally as things go. You know, we stayed on the sidewalk. But we were, agitating around the issue that this is a conflict of interest. Your senator is not representing you if you're a renter, because he's representing his ability to make a lot of profit off of his investment.
So tell us what his investment is.
So
what does he have?
Yeah, he has the Red Rose Manor apartment complex. I believe it's 50 or 60 units, a big, big building. Out in East Portland, right near the boundary with Gresham.
I was really interested to find that out. I kind of inherently, in my utopian view, thought that, you know, goodness, the senator is there to represent the people, and I kind of forgot that they have a previous life before they get into the Senate. And it was interesting that, you know...
Not so previous, current.
Well, that's correct, yes, yeah. Exactly. And it's a shame that there aren't any laws that prohibit,
And the job of being a senator or a representative doesn't pay that well. So it kind of, for people to have that position, they tend to be wealthy already. Mm-hmm. So
when we're talking about the specifics of HB 2004, we're talking about lifting the preemption on rent control. How did there become what we call a preemption? What is a preemption? Why did that happen? And why is it important to lift that?
Well, so as I understand it, and I'm not too much of a wonk in this area, but I believe it was in the 80s, the state of Oregon decided that it was in the public interest of the state to regulate the commerce of housing, right? That they weren't going to leave that up to just small municipalities to do that. And it might have been because of some agitational municipalities. I see you maybe have some more history of this. But so the state enacted a law that said, you know, hey, what? We're going to control this at the state level, and we're going to withhold the ability for you to enact any sort of rent control laws at the local level. And that was what we wanted repealed. I thought it would be appealing to the libertarian conservative mind, right? You know, that whole freedom type thing of doing what you want to do at the state level.
Local rule.
Yeah. Yes, so, yes, 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 yes.
So very similar to the minimum wage preemption, where they prohibit us from raising the minimum wage locally.
Okay, I'm learning things.
There's, a very strong analogy. And you know, rent control is a term that gets thrown around a lot and means a lot of different things to different people. And we really learned this listening to the landlord testimony down in Salem, where they were very eager to bring up what rent control was in, say, 1945 in New York City, post-World War II, where there were hard caps on rent. And that's not what modern rent control looks like whatsoever, right? Mm. I mean, When we talk about possibly enacting rent control in the city of Portland or Multnomah County, it's a cap on the rate of growth, first of all, possibly with exemptions built in when a property is going through a major renovation, and modern rent control tends to not apply to buildings in the first 15 or 20 years of their life, which there are a couple studies out there that show that. You know, the main talking point of the landlord lobby, which is that you're going to inhibit the development of new properties if you put in rent control and you cap the ability to make profit. And there's some research that shows that's simply not the case, and largely because of these exemptions that with this second generation rent control, where it just doesn't apply to new development anyway.
And so this is really not a cap, but actually allowing certain percentage increase in rents per year.
Well, see, I'll jump in there and say that's the unfortunate thing is that we won't get the opportunity to know this legislative session, right? That the Republicans and their accomplices in the Senate really prohibited that from happening. It prohibited a grand vision for the state of Portland, not just for what might be seen as the egalitarian Portland, but right, this sort of had effects, you know, from Salem to the furthest corner of District 2. Where we know that people are hurting, and we know that the same things that are happening in Portland are happening there. So, I think that it could have looked like that. It could have looked like a whole host of things, but those dreams were kind of quashed in the
Senate. And we know that rent control works.
Yeah. I mean, New York State, obviously New York City has been very successful through the years with rent control. So one of the things that I think people fail to understand, they tend to think of like the minimum wage and this issue as well as a Portland-centric problem. And as we know, it's throughout the state. And it's not just throughout our state, it's throughout the country.
Yeah. And it's really ironic that they want to say, Salem doesn't want to make decisions based on Portland. But then they also won't let Portland make its own decisions, right, by keeping these preemptions statewide. So, you know, you can't have it both ways.
And just to tag along here, and when Portland does make their own decisions, we recently saw with the relocation assistance that Portland City Council passed and has been enacted, it withheld a lawsuit by Multifamily Northwest. So that ruling came down recently from a judge in Multnomah County Court that said, hey, you know what? This relocation assistance is not rent control, and it should stand. And now that's set a really cool precedent for at least one avenue for change that could be expanded to other parts of Multnomah County.
Great. Yeah, I'd like to get into that a little bit more a little bit later. I'd like to hear a little bit more about what happened in Salem,
so
particularly
eager.
About this bill, which included not only lifting the or allowing rent control, but an end to no-cause evictions. Why is that important? Or why is it important to have both those things together in a bill?
Well, sure. So at the end of a lease, under the current law, we call it a no-cause eviction, but basically a landlord has the option to just not renew the lease. There's no incentive. It doesn't matter if you've lived there 20 years, if your children are in the local school. If they decide they want to, they can. And this is a huge civil rights issue. I mean, there's so many ways that discrimination can just be hidden away, right? If you don't like a tenant for whatever reason, you can just no cause evict them, and they can ask, well, why am I being evicted? I'm a good tenant. I pay rent on time. And the answer is, there's no answer.
In this current situation, all power does lie with the landlord, right? I was contemplating this the other day, not to plug this, but if you want to rent from my property management company, you too can get a rent increase like I got 2 weeks ago. The landlord has the opportunity to make a living off of you. The landlord gets to dictate how you live in the space. Obviously, you tacitly agree to this, but you kind of need housing and they have the housing, so you're not at the best advantage. But there's just a really, the power imbalance is quite bold on its face that says, tenants are dispossessed and the landlords are possessed. And then on top of that, right, there's not even the modicum of protection of like knowing that, you know what, we've made an agreement, we shook on it, I'm going to be here for as long as I need to be here, come what may. You've got to now think about like literally going home every day and being like, is there going to be an envelope on my door today? Like, is today going to be the day that my landlord decides to execute that kind of veto power on my livelihood? So that's one of the things that we really wanted remedy for during this legislative session was, you know what, I'm not an incrementalist, but even, come on, like, let's get some just cause protections, right? Because there are those situations where maybe there needs to be a change in housing. That's not for me to decide, but there aren't even any sort of remedies that currently are codified into law for that. It's just landlords can evict you whenever they want for whatever they want.
So just cause means things like non-payment of rent or running a criminal activity.
If I decided to set the unit on fire, which I would never do, like, maybe I should not live there.
But there has to be specifics.
That's correct. Pardon my hyperbole.
Right. And so the original form of House Bill 2004, even in its slightly amended form where it passed the House, would have still ended no cause eviction and replaced it by a form of just cause, which has exceptions built in for the landlord in the case of what you might call no fault evictions, like if they are going to sell the property or make some major renovations that will make it where you can't live there. There's a little small list of so-called no fault evictions, and in that situation, then there should be some compensation to the tenant who's being involuntarily their life is there's an upheaval, and that would be probably take the form of a monetary sum like the relocation ordinance that we did manage to get in Portland.
So something happened to all that in the Senate, and what was your response to that?
Oh goodness. Just for me, I'm kind of an idealist, and it was just really unfortunate, right? We had a bill that had been pared down and pared down and pared down, and we'd used that paring down to get votes, and we thought, you know what, this is still gonna make a difference for some folks, and let's see. And then I believe Sammy could maybe talk about the sticking point of
what was the straw that broke the camel's back?
Yeah. Well, so the bill got watered down and riddled with loopholes to the point where it actually became somewhat weaponized, where you could make the argument that if House Bill 2004 were enacted, then landlords would enjoy certain new powers that they didn't have before, which is deeply ironic to celebrate that as a victory. It would have still implemented some form of just cause eviction law, but it, through some technicalities, it would have incentivized landlords to force people into leases because the way they wrote it, it wouldn't apply to people in leases, which.
There was a specific type of lease whereby there's a fixed term, and at the end of the term, there is no, that's it. There's no negotiation, there's no month to month, and it allowed for that lease to be one that could be offered, and what could have happened would be in mass, just, only issuing those leases. And
the important relocation provision would be exempted. So basically, to call it a loophole is not appropriate. You could drive a truck through this. Like it was like you can imagine Multifamily Northwest, the industry group, would send an email to all landlords and property managers saying, okay, you need to put this language in your lease, and now you can avoid this pesky, renter protection.
Got it. Yeah. If you just tuned in, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. We're talking with folks from Portland Tenants United about what happened in Salem with House Bill 2004. You held a rally on the Capitol steps in which there was a big banner that said, Democrats got paid, tenants got betrayed. Mm-hmm. What did you do that day in Salem, and why?
Well, we did a number of things. So we went there to restore 2004. Mm. It was kind of a Hail Mary because it was very late in the session, and but the original version of House Bill 2004 was really, really a powerful piece of legislation, and we were asking them to amend it back. We did a number of things that make the activism fun. We had skits on the steps of the Capitol. We had a choreographed dance number.
With good choreography, I might add, to rebut a certain Republican on Twitter, but continue.
It was excellent. Yeah, Renters Are Gonna Strike was the song. It was
Jimmy, did you dance again?
Oh, no, I was I was Joe Tenet. I got to throw water on the landlord lobbyist.
We used the metaphor of the umbrella as a protection for renters, and as the bill got amended in our skit, it was torn with more and more holes in it, and the water got through. Yeah. So, what else did we do? So we were there with the musician David Rovix, who that week wrote the ballad of HB 2004, and we performed it inside of the rotunda. We went into the Senate offices and on each floor performed it again, and just generally let them know that we saw how much money they were taking from the lobby, and that was not acceptable.
I love your actions. They are
thank you.
Thanks.
Well, they're so exciting, and they really grab the public's attention. I know that some people don't like them. They think that you guys go a little bit too far. But for myself, it's what we need to do in the city and the state to really grab the attention and let people know that we're just not going to take it anymore. Mm. So, you know, this was PTU's first foray into the state legislative politics. You've been much more successful here in Portland. What policy victories have you seen in Portland, and how did you achieve them?
So the one that definitely comes to mind is the aforementioned relocation assistance, right? We, through, you know, public pressure and through popular mobilizations, were able to formally and informally labor, no, goodness, lobby, there we go. Labor's on my mind, lobbying is not on my mind, to lobby the city council to enact that, championed by Chloe Daly. It wins for tenants some financial remedy when they do receive a no cause eviction or a 10% rent increase. And
I want to jump in and just say that the election of Commissioner Chloe Udaly was pretty remarkable.
You had something to do with that, I understand.
A little bit.
Maybe informally.
Yeah, a lot of our organizers participated in that campaign, and she's a renter and was elected with a strong mandate, uncharacteristically in Portland politics, but a mandate from East Portland. That's where we did a lot of door-to-door canvassing, and she was elected to bring tenant protections to Portland. And it would have been within the first week, but we had that big snowstorm in January. But by February 2nd. The emergency relocation ordinance was passed.
Well, and that week of weather really brought to light how important housing is. I mean, we actually had folks die on the streets that week.
That's right.
And people think homelessness is a choice. It's not. Mm. I also understand that Wheeler ran on a tenant Bill of Rights platform. How's that work going?
Speaking for myself, I might say that Wheeler's platforms have, a lot of them have yet to be implemented. We'll say that maybe. I'm unaware of that. Sammy, did you know that the current mayor likes tenants?
Yeah, well, we PTU met with Wheeler during the primary season and actually workshopped this tenant bill of rights that he ran on. And some of the features of that are perhaps coming to light. I still think Chloe Udaly is the engine behind them, but so talking about an Office of Tenant Affairs that would begin to collect some much needed data, because so often in these debates around tenant landlord power, someone will say, that's just an anecdote. Like, actually, how many people are being evicted, no cause, or, you know, something like this. Mm-hmm. And the answer is always, we don't know, because there's no requirement that landlords are registered. There's no requirement that when they no cause evict someone, that this goes on a record somewhere. So this is one of the things that would be housed in this office.
And it would be some kind of an enforcement mechanism. So if for example, a tenant has more than a 10% rent increase and they have to relocate, they can go to, if their landlord won't pay them the relocation fee, they can go to this tenant landlord city body and get in some kind of enforcement. Is that how that would work? Currently, so, there's no enforcement, right?
Yeah, I mean, currently you have to go to small claims court.
Got it.
And with the possibility that you're going to pay the lawyer fees of the landlord when you lose. I say when, because more than 90% of the time I hear this, that's how these things turn out. This prohibits people from even going into entering the process.
So what you're saying, it would be great if we had this landlord-tenant affairs body, and there's currently, I understand, a line item in the budget that...
That's right. That's right. That's what I understand. Mm-hmm. So just to mention one other thing that was on the Bill of Rights, the Tenant Bill of Rights, that we would love to see, and I hear rumors that something might be happening here, has to do with security deposit reform. So often security deposits are withheld for reasons that seem really suspicious, you know, like you've lived there for 10 years and the carpet's a little bit worn down. And you know, they're supposed to be, you're supposed to get your money back, and you don't always. So, you know, why is it that it's on the tenant always? That basically we're giving money up front. It's a 0% interest loan to our landlord that we might recover down the line.
Right. So we're talking about policy. We haven't talked at all about tenant organizing, and you've been doing quite a bit of that at a number of different apartment complexes, and actually been able to use the collective power of tenants to move landlords to either back off on no-cause evictions or back off on huge rent increases. Unfortunately, we're getting low on time here, but could you tell us a little bit about what your next steps are, both in direct tenant organizing and... Well, just tell us what you're looking forward to.
Yeah, I'll segue that into just the thing that kind of guides me and that I think is really radical about Portland Tenants United is the language and the ideas that guide us. Just to plug the mission statement of Portland Tenants United, it's the mission of Portland Tenants United to build power and solidarity among the tenant class throughout the Portland metro region as a member-driven tenant union. Through organizing, direct action, coalition building, and civic engagement, Portland Tenants United fights to keep people in their homes and to achieve dignity and security for all tenants. That last part, dignity, right? How many times do you hear an organization talk about dignity, which I think we could all use a lot more of these days?
So I think this is a good time to plug the fact that that PTU is actually funded almost entirely by tenants and supporting homeowners who just support our movement. And so we're actually trying to sign people up, and we have a membership drive going on right now this week. So if people want to visit our Facebook page and click the sign up button.
What is the name of your Facebook page?
Portland Tenants United.
Uh-huh. And something else is going on, some kind of activity this weekend. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. Okay, so I'll tell you about it. We're having our annual barbecue in the park. It's a picnic. Tenant members, all union members are welcome. We're going to play some kickball, maybe have some music.
Is there going to be food there?
There will be lots of free food.
Awesome.
Good food. So this is at Mount Scott Park on Saturday the 29th at 3 p.m. Picnic area D, I believe. Yeah. So.
Great. So Saturday, 3 to 7 or something.
Yes.
3 to?
Okay. And if you want to find out more about Portland Tenants United, they can go to your Facebook page. Correct.
That's correct. Yeah, we've got a lot of. Upcoming organizing that we're doing this summer and throughout the fall. So if you're definitely interested in, if you're a renter, if you have thought about renting, if you want to actualize your power and come join a bunch of other rad folks who want to agitate for dignity and for housing for all, come hang out with us.
Thank you, Ethan Harrison and Sammy Black of Portland Tenants United. We're going to go out with a few announcements from Portland Jobs with Justice, which Amanda and I are very active with. This Wednesday, there's a postal rally. That's July 26th. Save our jobs, save our service, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m.
It's also the birthday of the postal office.
Yes, the 242nd birthday of the People's Postal Service.
Benjamin Franklin's going to be there.
Yes, he will. Maine Post Office. Yes. Then on Thursday, the 27th, we're having Portland Jobs with Justice is sponsoring a workers' rights board hearing about the exploitation of immigrant wood framing for carpenters and how the community can help. That's this Thursday, the 27th, 6:30 p.m. at the St. Charles Catholic Church on 42nd Avenue, just south of Killingsworth, dinner provided. And Sunday, the 30th, a Medicare birthday celebration. This is the 52nd birthday of Medicare, which is hugely successful system that provides health care access for over 55 million Americans. It's also a government-run system that provides a model for how we can implement single-payer healthcare in the United States.
It is single-payer.
That's this Sunday, July 30th, and meeting at the North Park blocks at 11 a.m., West Burnside and Park Avenue. And finally, August 6th, which is 2 weeks from yesterday, that's Sunday, a March for Freedom, Solidarity, and Justice at 1:30 to 3:30 at Battleship Oregon Memorial Waterfront Park, Southwest Pine. It's an answer to a Freedom March being organized, so-called Freedom March, being organized by white nationalists. The neo-Nazi racists, again, are showing their face here in Portland, as they did on June 4th, and Portland Stands United Against Hate, and many organizations, including Portland Jobs with Justice, is calling out the troops again for a rally adjacent but separate from the right-wing rally. It's a March for Freedom, Solidarity, and Justice, Sunday, August 6th, 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. at Battleship Oregon Memorial Waterfront Park on Southwest Pine. And finally, a Jobs with Justice announcement about an upcoming five-week class on labor history for labor activists starting October 10th. Well, that seems like it's a long way away, but you need to apply to get in. And it's going to be an exciting exploration, especially for new activists to the labor movement, about the lessons we can learn from the past. So go to our website, jwjpdx.org, to find out more information about that. So that does it. Wraps it up for Labor Radio.
Thank you, Jamie.
This Monday night and every Monday night. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories on August 4th, 7 p.m. at the Old Church in Portland. Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories will be performed by Melissa Bangs, who studied with the Upright Citizens Brigade. This is her one-woman comedy show about postpartum psychosis and healing through shared moments, laughter, and tears.